area activists, along with their lists of their known associates. The report reveals a fake Memphis Police Department Facebook profile named Bob Smith was used to join private groups and pose as an activist. We have just 30 seconds, Siva.
Yeah. Look, any police department, any state security service anywhere in the world that doesn't infiltrate protest groups or, you know, activist groups that way is foolish, right? It's so easy. Facebook makes surveillance so easy. My friends who do activism, especially human rights activism in parts of the world that are authoritarian, the first thing they tell people is get off of Facebook. Use other services to coordinate your activities, right? Use analog services to and technologies, right? Facebook is the worst possible way to stay out of the gaze of the state. It's great for motivating people to get into the street, but don't be surprised if there are a couple guys with crew cuts in the crowd with you.
Siva Vaidyanathan, we want to thank you for being with us. His new book, Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy, professor of media studies at the University of Virginia. That does it for our show. Also author of The Googleization of Everything. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland. It is 5 o'clock. Coming up next is KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO listener members and support from Oregon Zoo Summer Concerts, presenting Punch Brothers and Andrew Bird Saturday, August 18th at the Oregon Zoo Amphitheater. Starting at 7 p.m., doors open at 5 p.m., and all ages welcome. Tickets and more information online at zooconcerts.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Juliana v. United States, a landmark constitutional climate protection lawsuit, has been permitted to move forward to trial.
A fire burning on the Washington side of the Columbia River has jumped in size overnight.
And activist Gregory McKelvey stops by KBOO to talk about activism in Portland.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, August 1st, 2018. I'm Zealous Marchant, filling in for Brian Pritchard.
And I'm Aaron J. Bernard. While the weather is cooler today, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is still feeling the heat.
Trump and the Republicans are so sneaky. They deny that humans cause climate change while working to decrease that impact by causing more human deaths. Over 65 dead and 22,000 visiting hospitals due to Japan's heat wave. Over 70 dead in Quebec because of the heat. And how about them fires? California, Sweden, Greece. By continuing to push fossil fuels and hinder renewables, the oligarchs are heating the planet faster than anyone predicted. Oceans rising, famines just around the corner, and Yemen's record-breaking cholera epidemic will soon be joined by something worse somewhere, maybe in a large, densely populated city. Because of the increasing economic disparity here in America, while the number of jobs is going up, what those jobs pay is dropping sharply. More Americans are committing suicide, either directly, gradually, with drugs, alcohol, violence, or the even slower poisons of despair, couch lock, and factory food, because it's all we can afford. More plastic, more carbon, more consequences. Buckle up. Burrow down. Here come the turbulent 20s, so eager to begin the eco-cascade, they're starting early. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
If you have an older pork, beef, or poultry wrap or salad sitting in your fridge, it may be contaminated with Cyclospora parasites. Potentially contaminated romaine lettuce was used in products distributed by Kato Foods of Indianapolis and sold at Fred Meyer, Walgreens, Trader Joe's, and QFC stores, including here in Oregon. The items have Best Buy dates of July 18th to 23rd. Infection with the Cyclospora parasite, which is specific to humans, can cause severe and frequent bouts of diarrhea, cramps, bloating, fever, as well as a loss of appetite and weight. Similar contamination caused McDonald's to halt sales of salads at 3,000 franchises in the Midwest 3 weeks ago, while in June, 227 people fell ill from Cricospora in Del Monte salad trays. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control reported more than 1,065 cases of this infection last year, nearly triple the 304 cases reported in 2016.
On Saturday, August 4th, far-right protest group Patriot Prayer will be hosting a rally for Joey Gibson in connection with his campaign for a seat in the U.S. Senate. The Vancouver, Washington-based protest group has held a number of marches and rallies in Portland, with their most recent march on June 30th devolving into riot status, according to the Portland Police Bureau. The August 4th event has received heaps of social media attention, with 319 people claiming to be attending and another 566 interested in attending, according to the event's Facebook page. InfoWars radio host Alex Jones has claimed that he may be in attendance as well. According to Willamette Week and the Gibson for Senate Freedom March event page, crowdfunding efforts have made it possible to shuttle masses of Patriot Prayer members into Portland. Each shuttle bus will have armed security accompanying it, according to the event page. Although Gibson is running for a U.S. Senate in Washington, he continues to hold a number of rallies here in Portland. These rallies, such as the one on June 30th, have a history of becoming violent, with Antifa counter-protesters being omnipresent. Following the violence at the June 30th march, the Portland Police Bureau and Federal Police intervened and reported that four people were sent to the hospital after being hit by anti-riot projectiles. Due to the fact that these rallies often turn violent, an alert for people of color and those identifying with the LGBTQ+ community, be careful and to reach out to those in a position of privilege, has been circulated around social media.
Activist Gregory McKelvey recently announced that he'd be leaving Portland for Atlanta, Georgia in a matter of weeks. McKelvey has been a central organizer in Portland, Oregon for a number of years. Born and raised here in PDX, he attended undergrad school at Oregon State University and graduated with a degree in law from Lewis and Clark. McKelvey has spoken on behalf of groups like Don't Shoot PDX, Portland Resistance, and Occupy ICE, the latter of which he camped with his wife and newborn by his side. Gregory McKelvey is now joining the housing nonprofit Living Room as their communications and advocacy director. He says he plans to stay with them for 2 years before coming back to Portland. I spoke with McKelvey off the cuff about his action's latest efforts, his move to Atlanta, and this weekend's Unite the Right rally in Portland. All right, I have in the studio Gregory McKelvey, org extraordinaire. I'll just add that on there.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming to KBOO.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I wanted to get right into the latest action, the Wells Fargo divestment.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand there was a Pioneer Courthouse Square action. There was free pizza and awesome t-shirts.
Yeah, it was great.
With an expletive I can't put in the air right now, but I'll let our audience use their imagination. So tell us about how that went and how the divestment effort is going.
Well, it was bad because my mom saw me in the anti-Wells Fargo shirt and said, untag that picture from your Facebook, to do that. But in general, the whole thing was great. What's going on is that Oregon Legal Aid, which supplies legal services basically to people living in poverty. So, for example, if you're getting kicked out of your house and you don't know the tenant laws or something like that, you could go to Oregon Legal Aid and they could give you free legal advice. You could also potentially, if you were facing deportation, go to Oregon Legal Aid and they could at least point you in the right direction or give you legal advice. There's all sorts of things, domestic violence, these types of things that people need legal advice on and can't afford it. So Oregon has a great program where we can receive legal aid for people living in poverty. However, that program is banking with Wells Fargo. And so if you are experiencing poverty, if you're already from a marginalized group, you are then forced to get your services from a nonprofit, actually, in Oregon that is funding a bank that is actively oppressing you. So it's like you're getting legal advice, but you're also supporting Wells Fargo that I think many people know does horrible things in America and even in Oregon. The Oregon Legal Aid Workers Union has been asking to for the corporation to divest from Wells Fargo. They're not listening. And so We had an event that was sponsored by tons of different groups. It was so great to see them come together, like DSA, Portland's Resistance, Jobs with Justice, the National Lawyers Guild, so many. I mean, there's others that I'm missing. All came to Pioneer Square. We walked past Wells Fargo, and then we went inside Oregon Legal Aid, which we delivered a letter, and there was an argument with, like, the director. It was, like, one of those super intense actions. There was probably only, like, 100 people, which is good for a single topic like this. It's not like anti-Trump protests. That can get you thousands. So when you're specific on one thing and you get 100, that's pretty good. And we all go up to the 12th floor of whatever building to deliver this letter. And it was super intense and I think was a good, like, one of the last actions that I'll be around for.
That sounds incredible.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds incredible. Can you name some of the horrific things that Wells Fargo has participated in?
Absolutely. So the Dakota Access Pipeline, they were funding that. They also have been part of basically funding police, the military industrial complex. And then just recently they had, you've probably seen commercials if you watch TV, where they are basically having, like how Facebook is, apology commercials. One time the Facebook commercial came on and then the Wells Fargo apology commercial came on right after each other when I was watching TV. But basically they're apologizing because they were scamming their own customers and they're blaming their own workers, saying that they had a competitive atmosphere and so they were like making fake accounts and then basically screwing over their own customers.
That doesn't sound like an equitable bank.
No, and then just those are like the things specific to Wells Fargo, but if you're not talking about credit unions and we're talking about like actual banks, they're all really bad, so all that stuff too.
All right, so I understand you are moving on from Portland temporarily. Everybody's
yes.
talking about it who pays attention to news.
Uh-huh.
So when's that happening? Where are you going?
Oh, way too soon. I will be, my first day at my new job is going to be August 20th, and I will be out of here sometime between the 13th and 15th.
You are literally, you've got 1 foot out the door as I'm talking to you.
I know, yeah. I mean, like, I literally have boxes already, so.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yes, I'm very excited for once I'm all settled in there. Like,
sure.
Nobody enjoys moving, and I've never moved across the country. And part of us is like, let's drive, but like, I don't want to drive through the South, like, like, and just be like, cover the windows between, cities and just be scared. Like, oh, and I'm going to have a U-Haul. These people in like Alabama are going to be like, is this guy moving in? I'm like, no.
I'm from there. You could probably safely drive there. We've done that.
Through there?
You can totally, I mean, if you can handle Portland,
uh-huh.
you can handle the South.
But like, even if you leave, like, 30 minutes outside of Portland is like you're seeing Confederate flags. And so, like, I just, like, I have this idea of anything in the South that's not a city being scary.
I don't know what to say to that. I'm from Nashville. Uh-huh. My uh-huh. family's from Alabama and
yeah.
Ford and all that. And I think of both the North and South as the same with just very different mannerisms with the exact same explicit.
Uh-huh.
You know, but
well, great. So basically,
great
you're saying
that,
I should be scared here too.
I think all I can say is like, it's much the same here as it is anywhere, and vice versa. Like, mm-hmm. you can drive there, and like Atlanta's
well, the good
very
part
populated with lots of different people. So.
That the good part is like, I think Atlanta is like as close to Wakanda as you can get. So we're like,
that is the word.
Like, we're like literally. Going from the, like, one of the whitest cities in America, the whitest major city in America, to, like, one of the blackest major cities in America.
Yeah.
So, that hopefully will be, way better for me. I mean, like, it's.
You're gonna love it.
Yeah. I can imagine that. I'm hoping that I just go and really get, a lot of more skills. Like, I'm gonna be older and more mature, I guess, and, wiser. And really, I think that, I felt like I maybe hit some sort of ceiling here where it's like, I think I'm really good at what I'm good at, but I'm really focused on both in society and with myself, just progress. And I wasn't sure if I was really progressing my capabilities right now. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go spread my wings so I can become even better and hopefully come back and have new perspectives on how to better this community, which is always going to be home for me.
That's awesome. When you when and if you do come back, mm-hmm. what do you hope to bring back for Portland?
I really think it's just going to be new perspectives. I think this town is so small. And so the things that you're basically constrained to think about and work on in this town, you think maybe are bigger than they actually are. And I think when I leave and take a step back and can look from afar, then I'll really say like, oh, you know, this all really can boil down to these, you know, five things we really need to fix. And I can sort of think about ways to sort of work on those things that could be fixed without having the daily responsibilities in organizing that I have now. Because now it's like, okay, we got to work on the police union contract tomorrow. We have this action coming up, that action coming out. We're working on these policies. Oh, and you have a meeting with the city council member and then like all these news things. And it's like, I never really get to big picture it. And so the city will obviously be fine without me. And so I'll just leave, it'll continue, and I'll get to sort of watch from afar and get to think about how problems can be solved better in the future.
Let's talk about the Army at McGarvey. Army of McGarvey. So, I saw this post on Facebook.
So, like, we all know about, like, so on August 4th, actually, they're having, like, basically a Unite the Right rally here. It's like the Southern Poverty Law Center has said that it's going to be potentially the next Charlottesville, where Heather Heyer was killed by a white supremacist. And so we have these events in Portland where Antifa lines up and the fascists line up and then they duke it out and then the police beat up Antifa also. And, like, we've all seen that happen. And there's, like, this idea on the right that has existed for a long time that I'm, like, an Antifa leader. And so one of their, like, most violent members said that he's going to, like, go undercover with McGelvey's minions as Antifa. And so, yeah. And then he called me, like, an evil cartoon character. And I was like, none of these things are insults.
Also, I'm wondering, did he actually know how to say or spell your name?
The first time he said my name, he linked it to an article where the headline had my name in it. And it's like, so I don't think he knows how to say or spell my name.
Okay, I'm just
But like, he could have been smart enough to just like see the article that he was sharing, like that did correctly spell my name. I mean, really, I hope that one day I will be as cool as the alt-right thinks that I am. Like, these, like, neo-Nazi people are like, yeah, cartoon supervillain, Antifa leader, gets big checks from George Soros. And I'm like, oh, my God, I would love to be all of those things.
I don't know. Like, I see your point, but I'm also thinking, like, this is the same, and here I'm making a generalized statement, uh-huh. the same group that doesn't believe in facts but just believes that your personal feeling is as good as truth.
Yeah.
And so
maybe I am that.
You I think you're amazing. I can't quantify the checks that you might be getting, but
no,
well,
not enough.
Wrapping up, I can't afford you anyway. Wrapping up, is there anything, any parting words you want to say to, I don't know, Portland or anybody out there? I don't know. Well, since you're bouncing literally like in a week or two.
Yeah, sure. I just, you know, I will definitely be back. Like, somebody tweeted at me and was like, oh, you really don't care about the city then. And it's like,
no,
well, I'm, and yes, he was a white man. But I just want to be better, right? And I think that I, in the scheme of an entire life, if I'm lucky, 2 years or however many single digit amount of years is not that long. People go to college and leave for a long time. I stayed here for college. I stayed here for law school. So this is sort of going to be like my leaving for college kind of thing, except for I'll be working and doing great work in Atlanta.
You're here. Well, I wish you all the congratulations in the world.
Aww.
You are deserving. You're going to enjoy it. Live, grow, fight, all that stuff.
Yay, thank you so much.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It.
This is Zelos Marchant for KBOO News.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for News from the Boo. At 6, it's Kitchen Table Conversations. That's followed at 7 by Keeping It Real. Tonight's weather is increasing clouds with a low of 61. Tomorrow will be mostly cloudy with a high temperature of 73 and a 20% chance of showers in the evening. Today in history, in 1981, MTV premiered the Buggles video, Killed the Radio Star, was the first song broadcast. The quote of the day is from musician and actor Coolio, who is 55 today. Life is too short to not have fun. We are only here for a short time compared to the sun and the moon and all that.
According to the Oregonian, a fire burning on the Washington side of the Columbia River has jumped in size overnight. The fire grew to over 11,000 acres, and many homes, crops, and livestock are now in danger. On Tuesday, the fire broke out along State Route 14 at approximately 4:30 p.m. west of Worsham. The fire, now being called Milepost 90 Fire, spread across land owned by the Forest Service, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, as well as private owners. So far, there have been no structures or homes reported damaged. The Klickitat County Sheriff's Office ordered a Level 3 evacuation order in Wishram Heights, north of SR 14, which calls for residents to evacuate immediately. Residents living to the south of SR 14 are on Level 2 evacuation orders, meaning that they should be prepared to leave their homes at a moment's notice, according to the Sheriff's Office. Another Level 3 evacuation order was delivered for those who live west of US 97 and east of Dalles Mountain Road, as well as those who live south of SR 14 at Maryhill Winery. Some areas in Maryhill and Centerville are still under Level 2 evacuation orders. SR 14 is now closed between US 97 and US 197, which spans a distance of about 20 miles. As of Wednesday morning, the fire was approximately 20% contained. Goldendale High School is now the site of a shelter being organized by the Red Cross. Investigators are still looking into a potential cause for the fire.
Juliana v. United States, a landmark constitutional climate protection lawsuit brought against the federal government, has been permitted to move forward to trial as of July 30th, despite numerous attempts by the Trump administration to halt proceedings with the case. Led by Our Children's Trust and Earth Guardians, 21 youth plaintiffs filed their lawsuit against the United States government in 2015 in the U.S. District Court for the District of Oregon. According to the website for organizational plaintiff Our Children's Trust, quote, their complaint asserts that through the government's affirmative actions that cause climate change, it has violated the youngest generation's constitutional rights to liberty, life, liberty, and property, as well as failed to protect essential public trust resources. Juliana v. U.S. has faced numerous challenges in getting to trial. Not only did the Trump administration make attempts to block the case, but the fossil fuel industry briefly intervened as well. The federal government and fossil fuel lobby attempted to have the case dismissed, but U.S. Magistrate Judge Thomas Coffin and U.S. District Judge Ann Aiken rejected these motions on three separate occasions in 2016 and 2017. While the most recent rejection of the Trump administration's standstill tactics was handed down by the Supreme Court, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has also twice rejected the federal government's petition for a writ of mandamus on March 7th and July 20th, respectively. The case was originally set to go to trial on February 5th, 2018, but as a result of the Trump administration's oppositional tactics, was pushed back and will now be heard on October 29th, 2018.
You're four times more likely to die of a drug overdose in America than to die of a homicide, says a new national study from the Council of State Governments Justice Center. The 50-state report on public safety combines data analysis, case studies, and recommended strategies for every state, including more than 300 data visualizations comparing crime, recidivism, and correctional practices. The report found that between 2006 and 2016, violent crime rates decreased in 32 states, while violent crime increased in rural areas in 16 states. Also, prison populations in the last decade increased in 42 states, with 24 states projecting future growth in incarceration.
And now it's time for today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Native American news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
San Felipe Pueblo in New Mexico hosted Secretary of Housing and Urban Development Ben Carson and Congressman Steve Pierce Tuesday on a tour of tribal housing. San Felipe Governor Anthony Ortiz says overcrowding and funding are some of the challenges his Pueblo and other tribes face.
What you see out there in our subdivision, that's not even half of our people that are in need of housing. And it really concerns and alarms me when there's families living in one home, multiple families living in one home. So that's what I was extending to them, that, you know, we need funding. And I hope that they will continue to provide us those services.
Representative Pierce says Congress needs to reauthorize the Native American Housing Assistance and Self-Determination Act and says San Felipe Pueblo could be a model for other tribes across the country.
One of the major takeaways is that I would like more of the tribal units nationwide to see what's going on here, because they're effectively using the resources. They have good leadership. They've got good planning. They have a good housing director. And so for me, I will direct other tribes to come here and visit to learn from them. It's possible for us to do so much more than what we are at the current point. It takes local leadership, but we also need to reauthorize NAHASDA there in Congress, get the president to sign that.
Secretary Carson says he'd like to see job training included in efforts to improve living conditions at Native communities.
I think there's, you know, always room for improvement wherever you go. And one of the things that I would like to see, and one of the things that we're working on, It's finding ways to get more people trained and get more people real skills so that they can be involved in the building of their own homes, their own neighborhoods, but acquire the kind of skills that give them the independence to basically be self-sufficient in all areas of life.
This was Carson's second visit to see Native American housing firsthand as secretary. He toured a housing unit in Montana last year. Several leaders of New Mexico tribes also discussed housing needs with Carson and Pierce during a roundtable after the tour. A northern Wisconsin tribe has reached a settlement with Wisconsin's attorney general over its plan to grow hemp to produce CBD oil. Danielle Kading reports the St. Croix tribe filed a federal lawsuit after the state objected to hemp processing on the reservation.
CBD oil can be extracted from hemp or marijuana, but it has very little or none of the psychoactive ingredient THC. St. Croix tribal attorney Jeff Cormel says the two parties reached an agreement that the tribe will oversee hemp production for CBD oil on reservation lands.
That as long as the tribe is only dealing with hemp, that the state will not exercise any jurisdiction.
The settlement says the state will take no action that interferes with the tribe's ordinance and businesses operating under it. Cormel says the Wisconsin Department of Justice objected to the tribe's plans to produce CBD oil, saying it would be in violation of state law. A spokesman with the Wisconsin Department of Justice did not return a request for comment. For National Native News, I'm Danielle Kading.
Legislation has been introduced to help crack down on human trafficking in Indian Country. The End Trafficking of Native Americans Act is intended to address the gaps between tribal communities and the federal government. The bill would establish an advisory committee and create a human trafficking prevention coordinator at the Bureau of Indian Affairs. It was introduced by U.S. Senators Heidi Heitkamp, Lisa Murkowski, and Catherine Cortez Masto. The bill follows other efforts to address missing and murdered Indigenous women and expand Amber Alerts in Indian Country. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
According to the BBC, President Trump is considering placing a 25% tariff on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods. When he started the trade war with China, Trump had initially planned to impose just a 10% tariff. Trump's hike in tariffs is meant to pressure China into changing its global trade practices. And Trump's decision to continue to increase these tariffs is ramping up tension between the two biggest economies in the world. China has already made clear its plan to retaliate against any tariffs imposed by the U.S. Foreign Ministry spokesperson Geng Shuang stated on Wednesday that, quote, if the U.S. side takes steps to further escalate the situation, we will definitely take countermeasures to resolutely safeguard our legitimate and legal rights and interests, end quote. On July 6th, the U.S. imposed a first round of tariffs by putting a 25% tax on $34 billion of Chinese goods. Another $16 billion worth of Chinese goods are expected to be hit with the same tariff. Trump has continued escalating his threats of a trade war, even going so far as to claim he is willing to impose tariffs on the entirety of the $500 billion worth of the Chinese goods coming into the U.S. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says that, quote, the increase in the possible rate of the additional duty is intended to provide the administration with additional options to encourage China to change its harmful policies and behavior and adopt policies that will lead to fairer markets and prosperity for all of our citizens, unquote. The $200 billion worth of goods Trump is threatening to tax include chemicals, textiles, minerals, and a variety of consumer goods. A public comment period will precede the implementation of these new tariffs, but they could go into effect as early as September. Senator Marco Rubio supports Trump's efforts, stating that, quote, the only way to remove barriers is to demonstrate to China our willingness to retaliate with barriers, end quote. Critics believe that a trade war will raise costs on U.S. households and businesses. The National Retail Federation states that China's trade abuses need to be addressed, but tariffs are not the answer. It remains to be seen whether Trump's statement is merely an idea or an intended reality.
The African National Congress Party, the current ruling party in South Africa, has announced a plan to amend the Constitution of South Africa to allow for the government to seize land without compensation. President of South Africa and member of the African National Congress Party, Cyril Ramaphosa, has first claimed that they will be attempting to make the argument that expropriation of land is currently legal under South African statute. While the statutory method would avoid the risky strategy of amending the Constitution, it would likely be challenged as well. The proposal for the land redistribution constitutional amendment was first introduced in December 2017. The African National Congress Party has been in power since the end of the South African apartheid in 1994, with Nelson Mandela being the first president elected under the party's power. Current President Cyril Ramaphosa was elected in December 2017 and was endorsed by Nelson Mandela. In a public address to the people of South Africa on Tuesday, President Ramaphosa stated, quote, the ANC will go through the parliamentary process to finalize the proposed amendment to the Constitution that outlines more clearly the conditions under which expropriation of land without compensation can be effected. The majority of land in South Africa is currently held by white hands, which continues to stir up lingering feelings of inequality from years of apartheid. However, under ANC control, a number of white-owned farmers have been purchased by the white-owned farms have been purchased by the government and redistributed to blacks. According to Al Jazeera, a number of investors are concerned that the ways in which land will be seized and redistributed could be harmful for the economy or food security of the nation. Despite this, President Ramaphosa has maintained that no harmful economic effects will be perpetrated by this possible amendment. Economic concern is not unprecedented, however. South Africa's economy has remained fairly stagnant in recent years, and unemployment is at a record high of 27.2%. President Ramaphosa acknowledged that worrisome nature of these figures and, in addition to the land redistribution plan, has vowed to implement a stimulus package.
After Trump took the presidential office, one of the regulations he wanted to immediately repeal from the previous administration was Section 1557 of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. The act specifically protects against sex discrimination, which President Obama asserted included gender discrimination as he was shaping Obamacare. The ACA has not been appealed yet, but many people are waiting with bated breath for yet one more protection for transgender people to be removed on top of this and last year's challenges to Title VII and last January's Health and Human Services Department declaration that it would begin granting religious and moral exemptions to healthcare providers who refuse to serve LGBTQ patients. ACA states have not been able to fend off discrimination from workplace discrimination-related insurance claims or discrimination from insurance companies based in non-protected states but who have offices in protected ones. Reports from GLAAD, the National Center for Transgender Equality, U.S. Transgender Survey, Rewire, and Refinery 29 found in studies that 19% of participants reported being refused care because of their gender identity, with 28% reportedly being subjected to harassment in medical settings. Florida, for an example, is not a protected state, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, which purports to cover transgender health care, provides two common options to employers who wish to provide benefits to their employees. One option is self-pay, where the employer pays out of its earnings for the health care of its workers. And the other more common option for the organization is to pay a premium for a group of workers. It can mean the difference for a trans person of having due process while seeking health care or being denied through a company if they are based in a state without protections. I spoke with Portland resident Thomas Milbourne, a black trans person who discovered the loopholes companies can take to cut costs and deny health care to trans and queer people. All right, I'm talking to Thomas Oliver, based here in Portland, Oregon. Thomas, you want to tell us about your experience navigating healthcare systems here in the wake of the ACA possibly getting repealed and what you've experienced?
Well, first of all, it's been really difficult, and I've had to do a lot of research on my own. That's just because a lot of people in the healthcare institutions, like surgeons, coordinators, HR people, don't really know, first of all, the law or how their insurance applies to it. So it just makes it even more difficult having to educate people on their own services. And that's been a lot of what I've had to do.
You could tell our audience in a condensed way, like from start to finish, you know, how the process was to apply for a transition surgery and then to get that approval insurance wise and then where you're at now, because as I understand it, your company has denied you, even though you're in an ACA state, and the state, Oregon is a state that protects transgender individuals from discrimination. What's happened, from what you've told me, is that the company is based in Florida. Florida is not a protected state, and so they denied your insurance coverage right before you're about to have surgery. So I'm trying to give people an idea about, you know, like, it's a long road to get to surgery anyway. It's a very big deal. And then what you're, you know, so just trying to give people an idea and process.
Okay. Like I said, the initial communication came from the surgeon's office, and then, you know, I was issued a denial based on the fact that, for all intents and purposes, the procedure, there was no benefit at all, was what the customer service said to me. And so I've had to apply for an appeal and submit all kinds of information multiple times. After that, I was told to just communicate with HR on it to see why there was no benefit or what the contract was like, because they didn't know. So I reached out to HR after, you know, having to apply for leave and FMLA and that whole process, calculating sick time and so forth, has been like an effort outside of specifically surgery. So I did that, and HR, or the HR representative who was in charge of contracting the insurance and who was the, I guess, go-to for appealing the denial, basically told me that she had to do some research to see what the plan specified as coverage. And then that took a few weeks. She got back to me maybe 3 weeks before my surgery date, after like a month of contending with folks, and was just basically like, yeah, we don't cover you. This is a specific exclusion, along with a categorical exclusion for like cosmetic surgery, so you have no coverage from either perspective. And then from there, I guess the process is not really complete for me. I still have a denial. I'm waiting on the decision of whether or not to make an exception.
Okay. And you have self-paid health care, is that correct?
Yeah, and what that means is that the employer absorbs most of the cost of health care for all employees, and then they use Blue Cross Blue Shield as, I guess, the go-to point to calculate premiums and co-pays and things like that. which is different than most people. Most employers have what's called full coverage, which means that companies like Blue Cross Blue Shield, they would be billed directly, and then the copay would be, I guess, calculated for the employees, and then the company itself pays a premium per month to have that service.
So going forward, now you're playing the waiting game is what it sounds like, waiting for your company to get back with you to make an exception?
Yeah, because like I said, the company itself contracts what their coverages are and will be based upon, I guess, price points, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. So rather than having to appeal the insurance company directly, it becomes an appeal through HR, and then they decide whether yes or no.
In this process, have they spoken to you at all about being compliant with Oregon law and whether that matters?
Yeah, actually they have, and their answer to me, once I submitted the information about the bulletins that were put forth, was, well, basically we are not, you know, beholden to any laws besides our home state. So we don't have to cover you, so we can't promise you anything.
Wow. All right. It's a very final answer.
Yeah. It is. It's a big wall to climb, but it's not impossible. It just takes so much work and so many hours and so much personal research that it makes it almost inaccessible for folks who really don't have the time for that or capacity for that, struggling with other, like, I don't know, mental health stuff. If you have issues with just motivating, you know, it becomes really hard to face that kind of disappointment and be motivated to fight.
For real. I understand you've got a GoFundMe to help compensate for the hiccup in the transition plans.
Yeah, I do. I've had to because of the timeline that I've been given to work with. You know, like I said, a lot of companies stall on, first of all, providing a denial letter, which is essential to even moving forward, and then just communication could take weeks. So I've had to start this GoFundMe as an emergency effort to, like, make the $8,000 or $9,000 or so dollars to pay up front, because now that's what the surgeon's office wants.
Do you want to share how people can find that GoFundMe link and how to search it?
Oh, definitely. It's on my page. My page is public, and there's quite a number of postings on my page where you can find it. That's Thomas Oliver Milbourne on Facebook. The GoFundMe link itself is looks like a mashup of random characters, so I'm not able to give that out.
People should be able to search it just with your name. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they should be. It's called Help Thomas with his top surgery.
Is there, as we're wrapping up this interview, anything that you would like our listeners to know, maybe other trans folks who are thinking more seriously about transitioning and they don't know where to start, you know, where to research, you know, maybe audience members who are involved in workspaces that have or claim to have coverage for their transgender workers, but maybe it might be a situation like this where it's self-pay and what they can do about that?
Well, honestly, the first thing to do, which I've learned, is go straight to HR and go straight to likely the HR manager who is part of the process of contracting the insurance. If you have self-pay, if you don't have self-pay, that'll go through the appeal. I mean, we'll go through either the insurance company, or you can submit it for review through the Oregon Bureau of Consumer and Business Services. They kind of oversee the determination whether or not that decision, the denial, is discrimination or not. And most times it is.
Gotcha. All right. For those listening, I've been speaking to Thomas Oliver Milbourne here in Portland, Oregon, who has been encountering some hurdles regarding getting health care as a transgender individual. And you have a GoFundMe. It's searchable by searching, I think, top surgery for Thomas. And Thomas, I hope you meet your goal. I hope that this company that you work for clears the way and they get equitable with the Oregon law and they, just stop denying trans people healthcare in general.
Yeah. I should mention that it's like, if it were to come to that, it's way more expensive for them to try and contend with, like, legal things around discrimination and so forth. It's really just like a drop in the pan, right, to just cover it.
That was me speaking with Portland resident, black trans person, Thomas Oliver Milbourne, about the loopholes in transgender healthcare.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is CJ Fritz, Dan Raphael, Zelos Marchand, and Emmett White. The producer is Kyle Caresi. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Zelos Marchand. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Zelos Marchand. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, it's 7. It's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez at 8. Sojourner Truth Radio looks at the backlash to Trump's trades war. At 9, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Fight the Empire welcomes journalist Joe Loria from ConsortiumNews.com, who says that the U.S. media is clinging to hopes of Russian collusion. At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, Lisa Loving welcomes back Gregory Pardlow to talk about his new book, Air Traffic. And at 11:30, Black Book Talk welcomes librarian Patricia Hurd Hobson to discuss the best books they've ever read. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.